Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Set smart TV to record the football later.
You've got to be joking, haven't you? I ain't got a blooming clue. But I tell you what, if you want to chuck a few quid on it, your best bet is to try that BetVictor app. Even I'm a whiz on that. Listen, I've got a little tip for you, and you did need this from me. Oh, that'll be Sandra with the shopping. Sorry, mate, I've got a dash.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet with BetVictor. 18 plus, please gamble responsibly.
Son, seen the remote?
Liga returns this week once again, but this week's a little bit special because we're not really going to talk about any Spanish football. Yep, we are joined on the show, Jason and myself, by Keith Hackett, former Premier League referee and a man who was key in bringing in the VAR system into football. So we're going to be talking all about VAR after my soapbox rant last week to see what the troubles have been with the system being implemented, what can or should be changed as we go further down the line. And we decide, perhaps, is VAR the be-all and end-all of technology in football? All that and more coming your way with Keith here on Ayr La Liga.
He's one of these great club men who puts a stint in whatever he's asked to do, which is terrific.
Keith, we could wax lyrical about the trials and tribulations of Sheffield Wednesday for a long time. Instead, I'm going to bore you to death with the trials and tribulations of VAR today, if that's all right, mate.
Yeah, not a problem.
So Jason was telling me that you were involved in the setup and integration of VAR. How intrinsically were you involved in that?
Well, I've always been a very strong believer in the use of technology to help refereeing decisions. And it started off when I was the PGMOL general manager, when I put forward the proposal that we should investigate goal line technology and then work with Orkai very carefully over a period of time until we got it refined, and refined sufficiently enough for FIFA and IFAB, the governing body, to accept it. And then the roll-on really was the need to try and cover the shortcomings of referees. Look, in my day, we had three cameras if we were then unlucky covering the game. Now there's a minimum of 22. And as a result, at the press of a button, the controller can move to an angle that's not afforded by the referee. So all I wanted to do was regain balance for the referee, and where he's not in a position to see with a viewing angle, to have this opportunity to, with the aid of VAR, to rectify an inaccurate decision. And that has to be the aim of VAR. Look, I'm rabbiting on, but Mike Riley, the boss of the PGMOL last season, announced that VAR was coming in, and he announced at the same time that his referees, who have not had a couple of good seasons, to be honest, were getting accuracy of 82% on the big major decisions. That means about one in five were wrong. Wow. Now, that in that situation, I think, first of all, he's got to work with his referees, sort them out, and then hopefully get VAR to operate around about 95-98% in that range of accuracy on these big calls.
It's interesting, if you say 82%, you actually think that's quite a high number. That's not bad at all. And then you say one in five is getting incorrectly called, and you think, oh yeah, that actually is, you know, you could have five big moments in a game potentially, and one of those big moments ends up costing a side 3 points, which costs them relegation, absolutely, promotion, anything like that. So,
Or you get the wrong man sent off, or you get a guy sent off for a challenge that in fact was a fair challenge, or the reverse. So I think they're all areas where the referees are getting caught out. The big shortfall is, I think, despite what people say, I think that from the days that I were in charge, the fitness levels have declined, and they've declined naturally. They've not declined as a purpose. The fact is, it's an aging group. It's more towards the 50s rather than the mid-20s, 30s, and there lies a problem that the pace of the game is catching them out. And it's demonstrated by the difference between, say, somebody like Michael Oliver, who can get off the game and get pretty quick into a position, and Dean Dow, number one referee, because he's in those sort of areas of being able to see and act upon incidents that take place. Whereas at the other end, you've got someone like Lee Mason, who is, in my opinion, and I'll be blunt, not up to standard. And when I look back as a PGMO manager, I remove referees, tough that is, because I didn't think they were up to standard. Now we've gone back to almost a club environment, which means come see, come sar, you get away with it. And I don't think that's how to run a bunch of referees, to be honest.
Isn't that what should be changed first?
Let me ask you a question, actually. Let's assume, for the purpose of this discussion, that PGMOL did have sufficient referees that were within a specific age range, let's say the mid-20s to 30s. They were good referees. Did football as a sport really need to follow the lead of cricket and tennis in terms of sort of the usage of the technology? You know, would it not have been better for it to have been left alone completely and just for officials to live or die by the decisions as it has always been? I know, you know, you've got to look at it from a progression point of view, but is it really progress when you think about what's been happening over the last year or so with VAR elsewhere?
Well, I think there's a lot of work to be done with regard to VAR. I don't think the people who brought it in, the legislators, have actually taken care of the fan. And what they do is they leave the fan in the stadium wondering what's happening. And they put a little sign up that says, here it is, we're looking at offside, or we're looking at a penalty kick, or whatever the situation is. Whereas in the other sports that you mentioned, like rugby, like cricket, it's on the big screen. In rugby, I think they've taken it a bit further, and they actually show the incident. The referee's reviewing it with the, if you like, the guy in the studio, and he's reviewing it on a big screen, and everybody can see it. And I think that's where we need to be and need to get with VAR. But to answer your question, I go back to the very point that We're talking about massive amounts of money in the Premier League. We're talking about the elite level of the game around the world. And I think that there's got to be a sitting down of the referees, the administrators, the managers and the players for them to understand and work together to improve the system. Now, one of the delaying factors has been the referee going to the side of the pitch to review. And initially I started off thinking they could do away with that.
They don't have to do they?
No, they don't. And no. The Premier League, as I understand it at this moment in time, the Premier League are not going to do that.
Right.
So that will speed up the process. However, here comes the other side. I've got Michael Oliver, who's top-class referee, and he said, that's not a penalty kick. And his mate sat in front of the screens, who could be Lee Mason or someone who is less experienced, saying that is a penalty kick. Now, Oliver has got to make a call without seeing it, without having another look. And if we look at football and the skill sets of players, is it a dive or is it a foul? And there are times when you and I could have a lengthy discussion about whether it is or not. And I, if the referee, would want to see it again. And so VAR gives the referee a second opportunity to change his decision. In the Premier League, doing away with that pitch side monitor is going to lead to a massive amount of debate this season around incidents where the public, the fan, is going to be saying, why isn't VAR involved in that one? Because they've involved in the other. And I think it's trying to get a balance and trying to get a system that we're all happy with. At the moment, as the biggest supporter of VAR, I'm not happy because I don't think the quality of what we expect is being delivered by the match officials in terms of the communication, the skill sets required.
And do you think there's still a confusion, sort of, both from a player and manager perspective and also the supporters, as to what exactly constitutes a decision that can be reviewed by VAR? Because I know there was some in the Copa America, and I think in the latter part of last season, you see a lot of the players, they surround the referee and they're making the sort of TV with their fingers, when in actual fact, some of the decisions weren't ones that could be referred. So I think there's only four situations where VAR can intervene, isn't there?
Goal, no goal. Penalty, no penalty. Direct red card, a mistaken identity. And you're absolutely spot on, Oliver, that we have seen a creepage. We've perhaps seen VAR perhaps covering the back of a weak referee. And we have seen players surrounding the referee making those signals and no action being taken. So there is... You know, there is the baseline question that is asked of the VAR is that you only intervene when it is a serious and obvious error. And I think we've seen the man or the woman in the control room, VAR, trigger happy. You know, it's dead easy, isn't it, to call a penalty kick from a studio. Do it in front of 80,000 spectators, it's slightly different. and I think that VAR is coming in too often on too many things.
Is it too early for VAR in the Premier League or too late? It's just the fact the Premier League haven't got their act together, or PGMOL haven't got their act together.
Well, the PGMOL haven't got their act together, and I think there's been a reluctance from managers within the game to have it. I think you know that there are certain managers who will applaud its introduction, but ultimately, at the end of the day, when the boss of the PGMOL, who is supposed to deliver top class referees, says our accuracy is only 82%, when we know full well it can be in the 90s, then that is where the real problem lies and why we need VAR.
Keith, I just want to touch on a couple of points that you've made in the last few minutes or so. You mentioned there that there'll be no screen on the sideline in the Premier League, and that the example you gave was perhaps a high-quality referee like Michael Oliver being told to make a decision when he hasn't had a chance to have a second look at it himself. But is that not the same as what we have when a linesman sees something, an incident that a referee hasn't seen? And that the officials just have to trust each other's judgment at that point. Is that really as big a difference as what we already have at the moment?
You make an accurate point. The flag goes up and you make the call. But then we've got a scenario at the moment where the relationship, where VAR is operating, the relationship between the assistant referee and the referee differs. You know, in effect, he's being asked to hold his flag down when it's an offside situation until the outcome of that particular event. Mm. And therefore, one wonders also the fact that, I've had it when I've reviewed a game after a match when I was refereeing in the 80s and mid-90s, where I've got nothing from the assistant referee. And then I've gone home. The players on the pitch have said, that's a penalty, Keith, and I've rejected it. I've gone home, looked at the video and thought, well, it's dead obvious to the assistant. He's got a great view. Why didn't he come in? We're making an assumption that the skill set of the assistant referee is equal to the referee. And on some instances, the judgment needs to be made by the referee and not a subordinate. You know, the ultimate judgment, is it a penalty, is it not? And have I got the right player? Have I sent the right player off? You know, when you have a mass confrontation and you've got things happening around and you're in the middle of it, I had that with Man United Arsenal many years ago. you know, how many players do you send off? Do you send any off? Have you got the right person when you're sending him off? I want to be able to see that and confirm it. Because the guy in the stand, he's given me a film clip, but he may not have all of it. And I would like to see it. So I think there is a downside and a vulnerability to saying that the man in the box can make the decisions for the top referee.
It's almost like you would rather have the top referee in the box making those decisions from upon high, if you will, rather than down on the pitch. And I almost worry that that's what we're going to get to at some point, is that the man on the pitch is only there to give out the word of the man upstairs, so to speak. Almost, I guess, if you want to reference it in some way, like a prophet, if you will, for the VAR referee who's staying away up in the clouds and up in the heavens and looking on upon high.
The other side on that, Ali, if I can come in quickly, and it's a good observation, and that is VAR going to promote weak refereeing? Is that referee chasing the ball down, and someone goes down in the box, he ain't going to point to the spot, he's going to wait. Play's going to continue, and then somebody in his ear saying that's a penalty kick. Mm-hmm. And he stops play, looks in his ear and says, right, okay, we're reviewing it. It's a penalty.
I mean, 100%,
The other thing, just picking up on what Ollie just said, Keith, and what you mentioned earlier on about the lack of a pitch-side monitor, I mean, surely with all of it, like with the process, it's a wishy-washy process, I think, at the moment anyway, but surely you've got to have the pitch-side monitor there for no other reason than to show the crowd, the players and the staff of both teams, that, you know, what you're actually viewing, you're viewing it with your own eyes, because it must leave the referee on the pitch then open to all sorts of accusations, both in real time and after the game.
I think first of all, there's got to be a level of trust within the game that the VAR has high levels of integrity, like just like the referee. But, you know, your reputation as a referee is built on how efficient you are in terms of accuracy of decision making, and I feel that we could well have, with one or two weak referees suddenly running alongside the players when a big decision's been called by the VAR, saying, "I'm sorry, pal, it's not me that's made that call. You're having a go at me, but it's the man upstairs, and I've got to run with him." Whereas if he's going to a pitch side monitor, every player on that pitch and everybody knows in that stadium, the person who's going to make the call when he makes that rectangular sign and either points to the penalty area or goes and issues a red card or does whatever within the protocols, it's his decision or it's her decision if she's the referee. Whereas I think that we're going to have somebody stood in the middle waiting. He's going to be asking, the players are going to be asking what's going off, and he's going to say, well, the VAR's reviewing something. Wait a minute. It's a penalty kick. I mean, that's like selling ice cream in Iceland. The players aren't going to buy it. And a lot of refereeing is about communication. Sometimes the kidology that goes off. Sometimes how you sell your decision. And we're all concerned. You know, I think the big concern of managers, the tacticians in the game with VAR, is they don't want the pitch side monitor. I think a lot of them don't want the pitch side monitor because there is absolutely no doubt it does break up the continuity of the game. You know, you can have a fast-flowing game and all of a sudden we've then got this delay before an inspection of the screen or the VAR operating, and it slows the flow of the game down, and sometimes that will impact on the game overall. But we shouldn't worry about time. You know, at the end of the day, if we're adding 5, 6, or 7 minutes, we shouldn't really worry, because not this World Cup, but in the previous World Cup, the biggest time waster was free kicks and corner kicks, as against where VAR was being used.
I suppose it's all about getting the decision right, as you say, whether that takes a few minutes or not. If the decision's right at the end of the day, then it's done its job, isn't it?
It is, but again, I think we have to say that VAR will not sanitise and overcome error. Because, you know, I can sit in a room and often do with referees, and certainly when I was the boss of the PJMOL, sat in rooms, played every clip that was controversial of the previous weekend, and then there we were, 3 hours, sometimes 3.5 hours later, still arguing about the first clip.
Well, listen, this is my... Look, I will say now, I went on a bit of a rant last week about VAR because I've already had more than enough of it in terms of some of the farcical moments we've had in Germany last year when the players were brought out after half-time and all that sort of stuff. But also, it's not cleaning up the game. It's just bringing the debate that we have in a television studio at half-time and at full-time down onto a pitch-side level, because although VAR still has strict guidelines of what can and can't be looked at, some of those decisions, and I'm not saying all of them, because I certainly think technology should be used for offside calls, things that can be either yes or no, clear cut, for sure. That same with goal line technology, the ball crossed the line or it didn't. There's no shades of grey about it. But there are shades of grey in so many of the potential penalty incidents. And as you say, you've sat there and debated it after looking at it on 20 different camera angles. TV pundits do that as well. And now you're asking referees to have that debate that can go on for hours on end. It doesn't actually clarify a lot of these decisions up when you get into contact, intent. And that's why we're getting now the handball rule is being changed. So it's almost a case of regardless where your arm is and regardless of your intent, if the ball strikes your arm, it's a handball. And that seems to be just to help VAR clarify things up and make everything black or white with no grey areas. And football isn't a game that can have that. And that's why I think VAR has this shortcoming. Sorry, I'm going off on one again. But that's the trouble with it.
I'm smiling because you're actually echoing some of the doubts that I have. Particularly around the penalty area. I mean, we have seen, is the use of VAR going to now stop absolutely 100% grappling, holding, pulling, wrestling, however word you want to use? Is it going to prevent that? Are we actually going to see the VAR come in and say, look, that should be a penalty kick? And I have my doubts, because what Mike Riley has done, he might be criticised, and I might be his number one guy who criticised him at times. But in reality, what he said is, we're gonna almost butterfly VAR. Probably not the right word, but we're only going to come in when we need to come in. And I think, in fairness, I think that's where we want it to be. We if a referee is given a penalty kick, and it looks like one, then go with it. Don't let's have this long, pregnant pause, and then the guy goes, yeah, it's a penalty kick. Why has the VAR got involved?
100%.
You know, it's a goal. And then what we do is, you know what, one of the things that really frustrates me is that most of the goals that are scored, there's nothing wrong with them. So why are we going through this lengthy process of like waiting and waiting and waiting? Yes, there might be a double celebration, but look, we lose some of the passion when we've got a goal, everybody's accepted it's a goal, and up to the middle they've all gone, and then all of a sudden VAR comes in and says, now you need to have a look at this, and off he goes to the side of the pitch, and invariably comes back and changes and wipes out the goal. Now, for me, it's about balance, and you're right to talk about handball, because I think the law that's been written is stupid. And I'm glad I'm not refereeing, because in reality what we're doing is, I think I refereed nearly 1,000 games before I stepped onto a professional environment, and I think I knew my craft reasonably well. I then had to get used to the players and the speed of the game and adjust accordingly for dealing with professional players. But that is a skill set, and that is born about by experience and recognising the players that you're officiating with and working with them and gaining respect. And I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to sanitise the game And the VAR is coming in too often at the moment. And in a way, I'm applauding Mike Riley for saying we're only going to come on in on what is termed IFAB, serious and obvious errors. And we wait and see. Because handball, we're going to get penalty kicks like we've had in the Women's World Cup that's just gone. And we laugh at them. Because we say, well, the arm's in an unnatural position. You know, the last thing a player wants to be doing is thinking about where their arms are. Going for the ball.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting first few months, I think, certainly up until Christmas, until everyone sort of begun to work out for themselves when the refs are going to come, or sorry, the VAR is going to come in as well.
I think we're going to sit there and we're going to actually say, why have, I think this is what managers are going to be doing this season. The first thing is, why didn't it come in? Why didn't the VAR come in? When, you know, and we're going to be saying exactly the same. And then when they make the decision, the manager heads up the referee coming off the pitch and says, how can that be a penalty kick? And he goes, don't ask me, mate. The guy in the stand that's 400 miles away or 200 miles away, he's made the call. That's reality. That's because they're not having a pitch side monitor.
Everyone will want to play at Watford because after full time you can nip round the M25 and get down to Stockley Park and have a word with whoever it is, basically. that'll be the idea for managers. They'll be licking their lips at a Watford away trip.
Well, with the technology now, they can all replay, they can all instantly see it. And you know, I mean, ultimately, we all want the right decision. But what we don't want is, in particular, the Premier League has built its reputation in terms of speed and pace and the intensity. And I'm, as I say, I'm a great supporter of VAR, but we have seen too much involvement of VAR that's reduced that intensity. And it's almost brought the game into disrespect, hasn't it? Because we sit there and we go, might as well go and get another pie whilst we sort this decision out.
Well, and it just goes to highlight that some of these decisions are still so contentious that even referees can't make everybody happy, regardless of however many times they look at it. Which it doesn't help, I think, the authority of a referee of making that decision if you can say that referee's looked at it 10 different times and still sees it in a different way that I do. I mean, I don't think it helps that in any way, shape, or form. And the other thing,
no,
is the transparency. You touched on rugby incidents and cricket incidents being shown on big screens, etc. And we obviously had the interaction between the VAR referee and the referee down on the pitch in the Copa America this summer, which was debatable, that the VAR guys were saying you need to look at it, and the referee said, no, I don't want to. Which, yeah. I guess we've been championing that idea a little bit of let the referee make the decision. But at the same time, doesn't there need to be that transparency with the public and what the referee and the video referee are saying to each other, at least after the game, so we can know if or why a referee on the pitch decided not to look at it, or perhaps why the video referee wanted to look at an incident, etc. Does that not need to come into... Yeah.
Well, you know, I pay me 40 quid and I stand at Hillsborough, or I sit and I watch the game. And if we were in the Premier League, we've got VAR. I want to know what's going off. And what amazes me about the legislators is they've not caught up with the fact that fans have got mobile phones and there's YouTube and all those things that they can be looking at. They can be looking at a replay on YouTube or whatever the line of communication is. So my view is it does need to be transparent. We do need to listen to what's going off. And, you know, there is a piece with Gerard Gillett, who's the top Australian referee, who's come across to Liverpool University to study and is on the championship list of referees this season. And there is a clip of him where he was mic'd up and the audience could listen in to what he was saying and dealing with the players and the VAR in terms of particular decision. And it was just like listening in to like Nigel Owens rugby. Mm. Articulate. I let me have a look at it again. I've now seen it at slow motion. I want to see it at real pace. That's football, mate. Get on with it. And I'm thinking, that's exactly what we want. Rugby show the lead on how to use the system. And we're not, sadly, taking the opportunity of operating in a similar way. We decide, let's treat all the spectators that have paid the money like mugs, because they're not going to be involved in the process. Involve the public in the process by seeing and listening in, and we'll get a better acceptance of VAR.
Is there a fear from referees about opening up that door? Because, I mean, I've stood in tunnels at Premier League grounds, at Championship grounds, and you know, you see a referee walk by, and you even sometimes you have a quick chat with them if you're very lucky, but most of the time they just want to be heads down. They don't want to talk about any decisions to anybody. Is there a fear in the kind of referees union, if you will, about opening up that door in football, which has been opened up, as you mentioned, in rugby and other sports, of letting people know the thought processes behind that? And if so, why is there that fear of, it's not necessarily accountability, it's just an explanation?
Yeah, when I was the boss of PGMOL, I took all the guys on media training. We all had different accents, but we all had an ability to communicate and communicate accurately on the laws of the game. I tried to promote the idea, but football generally was against it. Referees are human and are articulate and can communicate because they develop that skill set out on the field of play. And therefore, for me, it really should be, let us open up the game more and let us have explanations about decision-making. But in terms of VAR, I don't understand the cloak-and-dagger approach. You know, someone whispers in my ear and the audience can tell, and somebody says to me, Keith, you need to have a look at that again, mate. It looks a penalty kick from where I'm sat in front of the television screen. Right, stop the game. Guys, I'm just going to look at the monitor. The guy upstairs thinks it's a penalty kick. I've obviously missed it. I'll go across, have a look, and I come back and say, guys, I obviously missed one. It's so obvious it's untrue. Penalty kick. Apologies. And we get on with it. And I, you know, it's not difficult. It's not difficult.
It's a separate discussion as well, but the other thing I think is where with this whole technology thing, in rugby, when you get any sort of decision, you just said there with Nigel Owens, that, you know, the rugby referees are very articulate, they're very strong-minded, and rarely, if ever, do the players argue back. In football, I think you're always going to have this, almost like a siege mentality from the players, even if you've got a strong referee like Mike Oliver, you're still going to get players surrounding the referees and debating decisions.
Well, that can be answered. That could be dealt with. And that's down to the authorities. And, you know, I can remember we had problems with mass confrontation. We started to see too many of them. And I discussed with Richard Scudamore how we, because it was damaging the image of the game. And players surrounding the referee damages the image of the Premier League. There's no question about that. And they've done various things to try and reduce the problem. But with mass confrontation, it was growing. And in an accepted process was, you know, when I sat across Richard Scudamore, he said to me, right, okay, what we're going to do is this. We're going to support refereeing, and we're going to fine the clubs up to $250,000 if they fail to control their players. Now, that was never invoked, but 50,000 were. But it had a desired effect. And for me, where players surround the referee, well, first of all, let's have stronger referees when appropriate, but let's try and talk with managers and with the authorities to put the right levels of control mechanisms in that prevent it out on the field of play. There's always going to be a human element. There's always going to be one player who you don't get on with. And as a result, what the task of the referee is to try to win, not the argument, to win the respect between both and get to the right court. And the referee, the player then feels confident in your decision making. So for me, let's just bring in a penalty that says three or more players surrounding the referee, right, you're going to get a fine up to. And if it repeats and gets to number five, you've now, as a club, had this five times, you deducted 3 points. See the effect.
It needs a deterrent, doesn't it? It's a fascinating discussion.
Yeah. It definitely needs a deterrent. And I think they're not difficult things to bring in. And yeah, they last about 6 weeks, but they do have a longer period, if you like, of operation. And sometimes I generally think that, you know, I mean, I was fortunate because I work with a variety of referees with different personalities. You know, Jack Taylor was pretty quiet. Clive Thomas would talk to anybody and threaten everybody, including the assistant at halftime, if he wasn't having a good game. Different personalities, but they all communicate with players and they gain respect. I can remember running the line for Gordon Hill, who was from Leicester, at Middlesbrough against Peterborough in an FA Cup. It was a game, and I was the linesman. And he arrived, Gordon Hill, he was a school teacher, he arrived late, and he wanted a massage. He felt a bit stiff. And Jack Charlton was the manager of Middlesbrough. And he came in, "What do you want, Gordon?" "I want a bit of a sort of rub down." "Fine." Oinks a player off the table, and the referee gets a sort of massage. And I look at that, and I said, and you know, afterwards, Jack Charlton came in. It was respect that Jack Charlton as a player had come across Gordon Hill as a referee on many occasions. And they had a working relationship. They respected each other. And I think sometimes we are seeing stereotyped, manufactured referees when in fact referees with personality might offend some people at some times, but at the end of the day, I think they're better referees. You know, we had Clattenburg, we had Webb. They both had different personalities. They operated in different ways. Howard was used to conflict management because, hey, on a Saturday night, he was a copper on a 12-seater bus sorting out the drunks and anyone else that cared to mention. And he knew how to deal with them verbally, and he could do that with players. Mark Clattenburg, the same. If you could understand his northeast accent, but he had a personality that could actually calm players down, and people would come away and go, "Yeah, he is a good referee. He earned it." And I think some referees at the moment are not up to the standard of some of the guys in the past. And look, I'm not the old guy that wants to have a dib at anybody. I've already mentioned that Michael Oliver is a very sound referee. I think Chris Cavanagh is a referee that's moving in that direction. I think Craig Pawson could be an outstanding referee. He's a good man manager, but he's no pace in him. So he gets decisions wrong because he's nowhere near play. And I think these are things that management and coaching can address for those individuals. But there are some referees on there who I just don't understand how they maintain their position because they're not good enough.
Keith, we've had you on here for about 40 minutes or so really appreciate the time, mate. It's great to hear you talk about referees as if they were footballers. You know, oh, he's got a great mental game, but you know, he's still just lacking that match fitness, so to speak, and stuff, which is always good. Look, this has been great. Absolutely loved this chat, and I'd love to chat with you later on in the season as well about perhaps some of the decisions. Of course, you're one of the people that opened up this whole, you know, fans getting involved with refereeing decisions with your books of You Are the Ref. So, I mean, part of this is to blame on your shoulders, I think, at some point. and I think
the more we can educate fans and generate the passion that exists, the better. Because I think that knowledge and understanding is far better. And, you know, I've been saying earlier today that to someone, look, I think we do need one or two professional referees
by that, I mean ex-players to become professional referees. And I think that's another debate, perhaps for another day, because I just feel that there's a detachment between a lot of referees, not all, and the game and the players.
There's, anybody that's, you've been talking about this on your Twitter feed actually recently, the idea of ex-players becoming referees. I would say it's an excellent idea, in the same way that you'd say ex-players becoming managers can in sometimes be an excellent idea. It's just having that connection with the modern game that you've played. You look at the pundits that have been successful and really caught the public's imagination. A lot of them are the younger pundits that have come out and been happy to be vocal, but also are still very much connected to the game. And I think it's having that strong personality to stand by your convictions and your opinions of being a pundit that could also work as a referee, as long as you're up to scratch with the actual laws of the game. If you can stand by your convictions, certainly can make a difference. Keith, we will definitely talk about that topic on another day for sure, man. But thanks a lot. The great Keith Hackett there, having a chat with us here on Eye on La Liga about all things VAR. Could have gone on for a little bit longer with that as well, but we'll try and save it for another time and have a chat with Keith later on in the season. Remember, of course, that if you want to get your early season odds, get to betvictor.com. You must be 18 or over, though, to gamble online. Please visit begambleaware.org for more information about gambling safely as well. And we will be back in about 7 days' time or so. Big thanks to Keith, big thanks to Jason as always, and a big thanks to yourselves as listening. Take care, have a good one.